We need to discuss how I need to eat my own hat because I saw the duel and
the last duel.
The last duel, yeah. And Ben Affleck was the best part. Sorry, not sorry.
I couldn't remember. We talked about that last time, and I can't remember if I cut it out of the episode or not.
Oh, no, it was fully in there.
It was in there?
Yeah, and Cody was mad because I said they had big fat faces.
It's on like DCOM! It's on like
DCOM!
Hello and welcome to Spooky It's On Like DCOM!
I'm, what did we come with? Scary Ryan?
That's right. And yeah. I'm Mummy Lynn.
Yeah, it's hard to write in if you can think of a better, scary pun for Ryan.
Yeah, I will say I don't think Mummy Lynn is my best work either. So if you have suggestions for either of us, please let us know.
I'm like Ryan.
Yeah, like a little bit more growl. Like
Ryan. Yeah, there we go.
That's good.
That's not bad.
Yeah,
it's kind of piratey though, a little bit.
Oh, I guess that's true. But pirates are also spooky.
Are they spooky death pirates?
Mm-hmm. And there's a black cat behind you haunting you.
There's a pirate, I think, in this movie, right? I think, does he dress up as a pirate?
I think the boogeyman just kind of wears an outfit that kind of looks like a pirate.
Pirates are in this year. Yeah. So, yeah, welcome back to It's On. We're doing another one here, another spooky movie.
Yeah, we're completely on schedule. Good for us. We did it.
Yeah, happy Halloween. We didn't go with a Halloween Town 2. We did Halloween Town last year, but I'm going to save that one, I guess, for another time.
Yeah, I had a hankering to watch this, and mostly I really just wanted to know what you thought about it, and if you feel the same way as I feel about it.
I this is one I was definitely like, I couldn't remember if I've seen it. And then when I'm watching it, I'm like, oh, yep, I've seen this. I've seen this for sure.
Yeah, I'm to the point where it's almost completely memorized.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
So and you watched it like since like the Disney Channel era? Like,
100%.
Since, like,
I watched it last year at Halloween. I probably watched it the year before.
Wow.
I love it. And yeah, this is disclosure. We have episodes like this where there's literally no way that I'm going to be in any way, shape, or form objective.
Mm-hmm.
I did try to watch the film from a different perspective this time.
Nice.
And so...
And that it seemed to improve, or...
I mean, let's ask this Madeline what she thought.
Okay.
So this is where we're starting. This was my initial thought going into it. So here, I'm going to turn this up all the way. Okay.
Honestly, Ryan, if you don't like this movie, I'm going to be really mad because it's really good. Like, it's really, really good.
Okay. So that's your, you made a color commentary as you watched or whatever.
Yes. I did voice memos to myself in lieu of notes.
Is that instead of typing, you just did the voice memos?
Well, Eric did, and he labeled them so I would know what each one was about.
Okay, great. You know what kind of is DCOM-ish? I did finally watch, it's been out for a while, but I watched it last night. It was the first Fear Street movie.
Oh, yeah. What are your thoughts?
I did like some of it.
Yeah.
I felt like it was, there's a nitpicky, filmy person nitpick, but it's like overly edited, in my opinion, where it's like, there's like, I think every shot is like 2 seconds long.
Okay.
And I'm not, and I'm
like
not sure.
Like Christie's videos.
Yeah, it kind of a little bit. Like, that's what it kind of felt like. I didn't really, and I'm wondering, you watched all of them, right?
No, I actually only watched the first one. Okay. Not because I didn't like it, but I don't know. There's just like a million things on Netflix.
Yeah. Well, so if you didn't know, this is the Fear Street series based on R.L. Stine's like kind of like, it was like this older teen kind of audience, right? Like those came out a long time ago, right? Like after Goosebumps.
Oh, yeah. And Ryan, did you know that those were my thing? Like when I was in my probably like 16 to 18, I had a favorite one and it was called The Cheater. And I'm going to send you a picture.
So does this feel like a capture the spirit of it or anything like that? Well, or is it just sort of its own thing, really? Like a... with the name.
What I was really surprised by was I was expecting it to be more young adulty or teen-ish, but like there was a lot of gore and a lot of sex and a lot of swearing, which I was really surprised by, because they would have like a little bit of like a sexual suggestion, which, you know, young Madeline lived for all of that, but it wasn't like explicit. Like they'd maybe put like one damn in there maybe, and it wasn't super gory. So I was actually really surprised by how intense it was in a good way. I mean, I'm an adult now, so I enjoyed it.
Yeah, for sure. It's kind of cool, and there's some interesting stuff. Oh wow, I've seen that cover before.
Yeah,
it's such like a trade paperbacky like romance novel kind of looking a little bit.
Yeah, that's totally. Like, they're for girls like me who are, you know, trapped in suburban Mesa who just need a little bit of a sexy spook in their life.
So this is like a young lady looking out the window on the phone, and there's some like Ken guy standing out in the window, says now she has to pay.
Is she the cheater? Yeah, I have to very briefly tell you the plot of this, which I still remember to this day. So she is going to take the SATs, and then she thinks she's not going to pass, so she has this guy, the guy in the window, the creepy guy. We'll put it in the Instagram, maybe, if we remember.
Yeah.
He offers to take the SAT for her, and then he uses it to, like, bribe her because he's in love with her. And so blackmail her. So he keeps being like, yeah, you better kiss me or else I'm going to tell everybody.
So it's cheating on a test and not like a cheating on like a significant other.
Well, sort of, yeah, I think she does a little bit end up having to cheat on the significant other. And that's the thing. Madeline really liked the strong, confident boyfriend in this love triangle. Right.
That was
really. But then, you know, I love the edginess of bad boy Adam. The cheater. Wow.
The cheater. So did you read a lot of these, or is this like the only one you kind of remember?
This is the one I really remember, but I know I read a lot of them. And if you had asked me at this age, what is your favorite book? I would have said The Cheater when I was like 6, 7.
R.L. Stine's The Cheater.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm positive I read more of them, but this, for whatever reason, is the one that sticks out.
Wow. Yeah, I did enjoy, like, it was, I kind of like they had like the big star sort of killed in the beginning, like Drew Barrymore kind of style with Mia Hawk getting it quick. Which was fun. And there's some it was good at the very end. It got really gnarly at the, it just took a long time to get there. I felt like a little bit. It's like, but this is what I was curious about, if you saw the other ones, because this one is such like kind of frantically edited, like it's just like cut. And I'm wondering if the other ones have that same style, because I know they're supposed to be like take place in different eras and stuff like that.
The next
and
maybe they're like 70s Sleepaway Camp, which should be fun.
Yeah. And then the other one is like 1600s, 1616. It's in the, what is it? 1666.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if like those have more of like, they were going like, this is the 90s MTV style. Let's cut, be quick and stuff like that.
Make it modern and kind of techie.
Yeah. And I'm curious if that's the case or if it's just, this is the way that they are. Cause it just felt like I was almost like taken aback by it. It felt like watching TikTok or something. I don't know.
Yeah. But we love watching TikTok cause we're young.
I do. Yeah. But it was just like, that kind of turned me off a little bit from it. And I think weird, kind of very like kind of kiddie Goosebumps style sort of story. you know, we have to do this to get this done and blah, blah, blah. But it's weird in such a context of where stuff is so fucking bloody and there's.
Yeah. You know, were you surprised by the amount of gore for the type of movie? I was very shocked. I was like, oh, okay, we're going there.
Yeah. Yeah. Very, very interesting. So I don't know. I think I might watch the next one. I'm curious a little bit.
Yeah, I'm going to too, and maybe we'll check in and report on that. And then, so one other thing I wanted to ask you about is every single one. So I'm a teacher, kind of. Every single one of my older students who are like 14, 15, 16, they are all obsessed with Squid Game. And I heard that you enjoyed yourself a squid also, speaking of the
young people. I pretty much watched it in like a week, I would say.
Yeah.
Or not a week, like 2 days, I feel like.
Should I squid or...
Yeah, I would squid.
Okay.
It's pretty good. It's quick to watch, I feel like, too. It's like 9 episodes, and they're all under an hour. Like, some of them are shorter than others, but it's like a mix of, say, I don't know if you've ever seen Battle Royale or Hunger Games, mixed with Willy Wonka a little bit, and some of, like, the themes of Parasite are in there and stuff, and... I don't know. It's cool. I think it's kind of funny. It's definitely gruesome and there's some gnarly stuff, but I wouldn't call it like depressing, you know, or anything like that. It's good. It's good. It's really well done. It's different than anything you've probably seen. So,
all right, I'm down.
Very cool set pieces and cool sets and costumes and cartoony kind of characters. And it's great. It was one of those things where I had to watch it when I started seeing memes. I was like, I have to figure out what this is or I'm going to be out of the loop forever.
Yeah, because Ryan is aggressively on Twitter. And if there's a meme that he's missing out on, he's got to know what's happening. Okay, one more question. I know we're like really getting hard into Squid Game. Why do you think it's so appealing to the teens?
I think that it reminds me a little bit of... I mean, for one thing, it's the whole world is into it. And I think Netflix put a lot of money, like, I mean, you can watch it with subtitles, which you probably should. Mm-hmm. But like, it's dubbed in like every language in the world, basically. Like they like went hard and like did that. So like it's reaching so far.
Okay.
I don't know. The teen thing, I think it's just like when I was a teen and you're kind of discovering these sort of really gnarly movies like Battle Royale, which came out like in the late 90s. And like, oh, this is so fucked up. It's some like kids that get put on an island and they all kill each other, blah, blah, blah. And it's like, oh, I got to see that. And like that was just like a thing with like you had that kind of got passed around. I don't know. And I also think like kids today really are like into other cultures, especially Korean culture right now, you know, kind of thing. And, aren't put off by watching something that's foreign, you know, like it might have been 20 years ago or 10 years ago.
Yeah, like you and me at home. What? I gotta read? No way.
Yeah, I come here to read no book. Yeah, that's like the thing, like discovering, going to see like Pan's Labyrinth and like, what? This is in Spanish? I didn't know that. I don't know. And it just has like themes of capitalism and stuff and rich people versus the poor people, and the kids are all on top of that.
Yes, you know? I love that. Let's keep inundating the younger culture with these ideas so they rise up.
Yeah, it's really, I'm just waiting for when they announce that there's going to be like an American version or something stupid like that. But
oh, for sure. So we can just take what made it special and unique and just really mix it into a blender of our thing as we do. I love it. Well, Ryan, if you say I should squid, I will squid.
It's worth the hype. Not to hype it up, but
it
deserves its hype.
I'm stoked. Squid, 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 squid,
squid,
squid, squid, squid, squid. I mean, the one other thing, and you can listen to us talk about this in depth on Apocalypse Video, but the most fun I've had at the movies this year is Malignant.
Yes. I'm very excited for that to drop, actually. And I thought that episode.
Me too. And guess what? That kind of leads us into the subject matter of our spooky film we watched this week.
I'm so glad that you felt Malignant vibes from watching Don't Look Under the Bed.
Frances McCullough is being framed by the boogeyman. The only one who can help her is an imaginary friend named Larry.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much. Yeah, yeah. Woo.
So, leave the light on. Keep the door open. And whatever you do, don't look under the bed. Don't miss the Saturday premiere, Saturday, October 9th at 7:30, 6:30 Central on Magical World of Disney.
It's like this is what Malignant grew up to be. Like, this movie walked so Malignant could run.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah, so Don't Look Under the Bed, it came out October 9th, 1999. So 1999, big year for DCOMs, big year for movies in general.
Huge year.
You know, the Matrix, Phantom Menace.
Pulp Fiction? Is that wrong?
No, that was 94.
God damn it. I just want to know things.
Yeah.
Jurassic Park?
I think that was also 94.
Okay, so I'm just thinking of
94 and 99 year. Are both those like two big years of in the 90s. You know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Make it seem like a good mistake I made.
But yeah, so it was, and also we had 94 in the brain because of Fear Street 1994.
Of course, yes. Mm-hmm. It's all coming together.
But yeah, so don't look under the poster says this Halloween, whatever you do, don't look under the bed. Bye. Which I totally forgot what it was about, but once it started and things started happening in it, I remembered. I was like, this is what this one is. Like, for some reason, I got this. I know it's not Under Wraps is like the, you know, the Mummy movie, Madeline.
Madeline. No, Mummy Lynn.
But I don't, there's something like these two sort of stuck together to me for some reason. Like,
they have a very similar vibe. And what I enjoy about both of them is there's a lot of adult humor, mm-hmm. which is kind of fun.
Yeah. So should you want to just give like a brief sort of recap of what Don't Look Under the Bed is about?
Definitely. So in the small town of Middleburg, the suburban town, suddenly pranks are being played all around. There's gelatin in the swimming pool. There are dogs on the roof. And over
spray paint graffiti.
Yes, with bees.
Bees. Bees! The bees!
The bees! And then over time, what we come to realize is that our main character, Francis, is being framed by none other than the boogeyman.
It's the boogie woogie man. Keep your lights on as long as you can.
What is that?
I think that might be an ICP song. I don't know.
Why do you know an ICP song?
Oh, no, it's not. Wait, no, it's not that. Boogie woogie man, keep your lights on.
Maybe you just wrote
as long as it can. It is. It's the boogie woogie woo from ICP.
Oh, right.
And the reason why I know this is they used to play this on party radio at 103.9.
Really?
It was like on there. Yeah, I remember that. Like it was one of the. It was like in the rotation in 1997. God. You know.
I just remember my brother loved ICP. He used to dress up like the clowns and it was scary. And the only song that I remember is one that says, dead bodies make me happy. Mass murder makes me happy. And I was like, wow, this is fucked up. Ah, there's a big clown. I don't like it.
So I haven't heard this in a million years. I just know that line and I don't know what that stuck with me. Should I? Let's play it.
Yeah, we gotta play it.
I can't even look at this.
They're so gross.
The beast lives out of the raging storm in the dead of night. The ravenous, blood-sick creature searches for its
I don't remember this at all.
Through the hideous darkness it lurches, driven by death itself. Only the satisfaction of slaughter will cause it.
What the fuck
No. Okay, but here's the thing, like, the fact that these, like, very non-talented, gross white men were able to make this cult following for themselves, that's a little bit impressive.
It is. I just remember that little chorus or whatever, and that, and I didn't know who idea it was from until years later, and I'm like, who the hell sang that? So that's some spooky stuff for this episode.
That was terrifying. While we're kind of talking about that, what I wanted to ask you is, do you think, and if you remember, would this have kind of scared you as a kid, like especially the beginning parts with like the doll head moving and the storms and stuff?
That stuff is okay. So like you're talking about like this, she's being framed by the boogeyman, all these like, and there's reasons for that we'll get into.
Yeah.
But I feel like some of the visuals in the beginning of the movie are pretty, yeah, damn creepy for one of these DCOMs.
Yeah.
Like, I think those, like, the head's moving. Like, there's, like, you're just in the class, and there's something that moves in the background, like a statue or something, and looks at her.
Yes. Yes.
I forget what it is exactly.
But I think it is. I think you're right. It's a statue, like a school statue.
And there's a point where like she shows up at school and everybody's frozen except her in like the courtroom, and it's like there's no sound. It's just like no music or anything. And I'm like, wow, they're really going for it with this. It's really cool.
Yeah. There were scenes like especially the dolls, like you said, those, because every time something creepy would start happening, the dolls would like very slowly move their heads toward the direction of the camera.
Mm-hmm.
That scared me.
Yeah, there's some stuff in there that's like pretty good, and like there's whatever, all this stuff you see, like just the boogeyman's hands and such that are sort of creeping into frame, and really crazy, pretty gnarly stuff, I would say.
While we're talking about the boogeyman's hands, I did have a comment about that. Are you ready?
Yeah, sure. Okay. We're back to the voice memos.
The boogeyman's hand looks exactly like a raw chicken.
Okay, great.
Would you agree?
Yes, it looks like raw chicken.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe that's been like chewed on by something.
Yeah.
You know?
Those were the notes that I felt were really important. I was like, Eric, get this.
The boogeyman's thought. Oh, it's so crystal clear too.
Yeah.
Such good.
Okay, good. I'm happy.
So yeah, so basically, you know, Frances, she's like, it's not me. It's, you know, that's doing this stuff. And it turns out she's being followed around by a guy named Larry Houdini that no one else can see but her. And it turns out this is her brother's imaginary friend. And I guess the thing is that imaginary friends, when you stop believing them in too early, become boogeymen or boogie people.
Which I think is a great like concept for a movie. It is. It's very creative. No one's ever done that before.
Yeah, it is. I mean, I was having like, it was reminding me a little bit of like Inside Out with like their little,
Bing Bong.
That's the movie, right? Yeah. Bing Bong. Yeah. The little elephant or whatever it was.
Mm-hmm.
I was having reminiscence of that. And yeah, pretty and weird. Like, I'm like, who wrote that? Like, whose idea? Like, how do you come up with that idea?
You'd be a genius.
Like, you should have looked into like where the boogeyman trope came from. Like what that is.
Well, have you seen Sinister?
Yes.
It's a demon named Bagul. You don't think they made that up just for the movie, right? That has to be real.
All right, let's see. The boogeyman, also different spell, is also spelled boogeyman, bogeyman, bogeyman, boogie monster, it's just like every different way. Boogie woogie. Type of mythical creature used by adults to frighten children into good behavior. Boogeyman have no specific appearance or conceptions, vary drastically from household and culture. But they are most commonly depicted as masculine or androgynous monsters that punish children for misbehavior. The boogeyman or conceptual similar monsters can be found in many cultures around the world. Boogeyman may target a specific act or general misbehavior depending on what purpose needs serving, often based on a warning from a child's authority figure. Mm-hmm. And it looks like, I'm trying to see when it came about, but...
Well, I pulled up the first reference to the boogeyman would be considered the hobgoblins described in England in the 1500s.
Mm.
Ooh, there's a spooky picture.
This has like a picture. Goya's Cuver El Co. Here comes the boogeyman. The boogeyman is coming from 1797. Like a kind of a drawing.
Okay, so, don't Google boogeyman and then look for Google image searches because it's really scary. Look at this one. This one, wait. I don't like that one.
Oh, that's scary. Yeah, that one on the boogeyman on the right, that drawing, that's the one I saw on the wiki.
This
that's
one? Like
the far, yeah.
Yeah.
And of course, you know, Michael Myers is the boogeyman. But he is not really coming at you for misbehavior, I guess, if you're having sex. Premarital sex.
Yeah, he hates that. Especially like Shrek if it's with your guy. Sister.
Dun, dun. Dun, dun. Yeah, so... Yeah, so I guess, yeah, so it's just, it's sort of a dope thing that's just open to everybody to use, boogeyman.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, and they really go for the costuming in this for it. It's pretty damn creepy and weird.
Yeah, I really like how both the boogeyman looks and then when Larry starts turning into the boogeyman. I feel like the makeup and whatever effects they're using are really cool.
Yeah, really big gnarly nails and crazy teeth and eyes and, yeah, it's pretty wild.
They look genuinely scary for that age group. Like, I think it walks the line between not horrifying children and then being actually scary for them.
Well, I was reading on the wiki, it says that the release and reception, Don't Look Under the Bed, premiered on Disney Channel October 9th. It was the second DCOM to receive a TV PG rating due to its scary scenes. I wonder what the first one was.
I wonder if it's under wraps.
Maybe. Well, we didn't mention that this was directed by Kenneth Johnson, who also directed Our Girl Xenon.
Okay, it's all starting to make sense.
But there's this, according to Johnson, there's a number of meetings where we talk about the tone and what Disney wanted to be. Scary, but not too scary. That's the bar we kept trying to find. Everybody thought that we had it until they started getting derogatory mail after it aired. And is it due to complaints from parents who found the film to be too scary for young children, Disney Channel seized annual rebroadcasts of it during the month of October after 2006.
Whatever. Those people don't get it.
Yeah. So. And it's listed on Complex's 19, the best 25 best DCOMs, and Entertainment Weekly's number 27 out of 30 best DCOMs.
I think it should be higher, but that's fine.
We should go through those lists sometimes. We should, I feel like,
decide which are the best.
Yeah.
But you know, like, speaking of the best, I feel like there's one person in this movie who deserves some kind of award for their acting.
Who's that?
Guess. Just giving an all-around stellar performance.
Are we talking of Stephen Tobolowsky?
Well, I think he's very good also. I love him. But I feel like this person might win like best overall DCOM character just from like their comedic timing to just they're just a great all around actor, in my humble opinion.
Are you talking about the guy from Even Stevens? That's the Larry, or who are we talking?
Yeah, I'm talking about Larry Houdini, of course. Larry Hodges. He's so funny. He does so much like slapstick comedy. And I just think he's super good and super funny. And I was in love with him growing up.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
Is he your...
Nicey-nicey?
Nicey-nicey?
You bet he is. Cue the music.
Nicey-nicey. I think he's okay. He's definitely going for like Robin Williams and Genie vibe, I feel like.
Yeah, he's like so goofy and fun.
Yeah, I think he's all right. Like, I don't know if it's shut up. My phone is yelling at me. I think he kind of works. I'm not sure if I like the main actress. Who's it? Erin Chambers, who plays Franny.
Mm-hmm. I like her a lot too.
I like her, but I don't think there's something missing. I don't know. She's not I don't think she's bringing the Kirsten Storm energy.
I think the problem is that Larry is so fun and over the top, and then she's just the straight man, and she never really gets to do anything fun or funny because she's always just kind of playing to him, you know?
Yeah, I think it's she started off strong in the movie, and then it kind of became a lot of and this is part of TV movies, one of the things where it's scene after scene of her like, don't you see him? Or yeah. Like, it wasn't me. Like, she's like left, you know, in a messy kitchen, you know, of by herself. And they're like, what'd you do? There's a like maybe one too many scenes of that, in my opinion. But that's just, you know, if you were watching this on TV and you happen to jump in 20 minutes late, you would get at least one of those scenes, you know?
Right. Kind of it thing. Does get so. Really repetitive because it's just it's continually like, you did this. No, I didn't. You did. No, I didn't. So mm-hmm. She really does. She has to play the straight man the entire time. I really like her expressions and her reactions. I think that's all good. And she's doing a good job, too, of this character. It's supposed to be this idea that she is younger, but because she's so intelligent, she's able to go to high school. So she like skips a grade or a couple grades, maybe. And it's her parents are worried that she's not emotionally mature enough to be in high school. And they actually think that might be the reason why she's causing all these pranks to happen. And I think she does a really good job of being like emotionally immature while also trying to be very logical. I think she plays well to that.
Yeah. And it also dives into the whole thing, like, because they kind of mention this at weird times, but her brother had leukemia, her younger brother. And the whole idea like that she had to like grow up fast to like take care of him or something, you know, and that's like another kind of element of the whole like growing up too fast situation, which is kind of there's something in there for this. You know, something like the movie's about something, even though it's fucking about boogeymen and invisible and not invisible imaginary friends.
Yeah.
There's like this little there's a little bit of that in there, which is like, oh, there's some stakes and some interesting ideas.
Yeah, I think it's cool because a lot of the times we'll talk about DCOMs and be like, what do you think they're trying to like say? Like we said that a lot with The Descendants, but this one, it's very clear. It's about appreciating your childhood while you have it and still keeping that imaginative spark alive in you even when you grow up. And I think that is a super, super cool theme for a children's movie. It's really fun to me.
Yeah, and then also it's not scared to be creepy as hell.
Yeah, you know? Which is cool.
And it's fucking parents, like stupid moms that were writing, you know, this is too scary for my kid. The kid can handle it.
Yeah,
you know?
Fuck off. They're probably like, Mom, let me watch it again. And they're like, no, it's the devil's work.
Yeah. I mean, there's some creepy ass shit going on, you know? Like I said, like they're like, I think the best, most effective is that part when she walks up to the school and all the kids are frozen and in place when there's no music. Like I was expecting some, because there's some goofy like, bang, 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 like circus music and points and stuff, but it does like a whole thing where like whenever she sees Larry, the imaginary friend or the boogeyman, does like Dutch angles and there's lighting changes and stuff.
I thought you so might just appreciate that, maybe.
Yeah, like there's an instance where she chases Larry into like a band room. And this is coming in from like a meeting with the principal and like the school psychologist or something. And she gets in there. It's all Dutch angle. And there's like blue and purple lights going on in there. And like in where she sees Larry and she does the whole thing. Like, don't you see him? He's playing a trumpet on the piano. And it turns back and that lighting has changed again, you know, and then it goes back to like, you know, static shots. And I'm like, they're going for it, you know, with this.
Yeah, it's art. It's art if you think about it. Can we talk about some of our favorite scenes, maybe, or favorite parts?
Yeah, sure.
So one, maybe my favorite part of the movie, I really like the parents because they have this interesting dynamic where the mom seems to be like the one who, quote unquote, works. She is a anthropologist, which I think is a really cool career for a mom. Now, they don't say if the dad works as well, but he seems to be the one who's like vacuuming and dusting.
He's wearing a suit usually, like a tie. So
yeah.
I don't know. He must be, unless that's what he wears. But
I think that's kind of cool that they're like, look, dads can clean too. That's really kind of fun.
Like, and like except they had the whole thing where like Larry's just like, what, your dad cleans the house? Like,
yeah, but I think that it's cool mm-hmm. that they like bring that up. And she's like, yeah, so what? He does, you know. But that's not the part I'm talking about. I'm talking about when they are like sitting together and they're like trying to talk about what's going on with Frances, because she keeps, they think she's playing all these pranks. And the mom's like, could it be that there's some way that they're controlling the minds of all the children of Middleburg? And the dad's like, are you telling me there's some conspiracy where someone is coming into our house to control our children's minds? How would they do that? And then you look over and Bert's watching TV. And yeah. it's just so comical and funny. It's one of those things where I guess you had to be there. But trust me, it's funny and you should watch it.
Well, you got Stephen Tobolowsky, you know, he's, was it Ned from Groundhog Day? You know?
Yes.
Hey, Phil? Phil? Phil Connors? Phil Connors, I thought that was you.
Hi, how you doing? Thanks for watching.
Hey. Now, don't you tell me you don't remember me, because I sure as heck fire remember you.
Not a chance.
Ned! Ryerson! Needle Nose Ned, Ned the Head. Come on, buddy. Case Western High.
I remember him from Freaky Friday. Do you remember him in that?
Uh-oh.
He's the teacher that keeps giving the daughter a hard time because the mom said no to him for prom. Yeah, he's cute. He's good in that.
Yeah, like he's in a million thing. Yeah, Freaky Friday. Okay, that's right. Mm-hmm. I'm looking at his stuff right now. He's the dad in this, and he's great. He has that. I sent you that picture of him with like a knife, and he's like, "Where's the gelatin?" or whatever. Speaking of that, it's probably my favorite shot. Scene is the legs in the school pool sticking out of the gelatin.
Yes, you know, that's
like
very
bouncing
good.
Around. Yeah,
I feel like the pranks are really, really unique. They're not the kind of pranks that you would first think of.
The spray painting B is kind of weak, in my opinion, a little bit.
I do agree, but I really like the part when her locker doesn't have a B on it, and then she opens it up and there's a B inside. That's kind of fun.
That is good.
Yeah.
Maybe it'd be cool if it was, you know, 666 or something. I don't know. Just,
well, it's like a B for boogeyman.
Yeah. Speaking of boogeyman, they say boogie too much in this movie, I think. There's boogie book and boogie goo and boogie everything.
Boogie world.
Boogie world. I was just like, ugh, too much boogie.
They do say boogie a lot. I will agree to that.
Yeah. And also there's not a whole, I mean, it's like the end climax, but there's not much like bed stuff like under the bed, I feel like.
But that's like the whole last like 20 minutes.
It is, but I don't know. It's just like not really like a thing. Like she doesn't really like it's not really established in the beginning, you know, anything about like under the bed, I feel like.
Yeah, I could see that.
You know what I'm talking about? Like, I don't know. It's just like that feels like a little bit of a title added later or something like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
There's some really cool shots though, where it's like a wide of her bedroom and there's like all the smoke coming out from under the bed and all the lights and stuff.
Yeah.
It's really cool.
I like that. And talking about when they get into the boogie world, I know it looks kind of like lame 90s-ish, but it's kind of creative. I really like how there's all these items that you would find discarded under your bed. Like there's a huge moldy sandwich that has like scary worms coming out of it that like grab Franny. And there's like race cars and a rollerblade. And they establish a really cool world down there, I think.
It kind of you ever seen Little Monsters, the movie with Fred Savage?
I actually haven't, but I don't know why.
And Howie Mandel. I can't remember much of it, but this movie reminds me of that. Like that type of world they go down into. Mm-hmm. Where it's sort of just this scary, weird world, you know, down the rabbit hole kind of thing, you know?
Yeah.
Don't Look Under the Bed feels like a little bit of an afterthought, in my opinion, of the movie. Like, that doesn't seem like it's the focus until the end. Like, that's where the portal is, to go under the bed or whatever.
Yeah, they have to build up to it.
Yeah.
Ryan's not going to get me to say one bad thing about the movie. I can't.
No, I'm not really saying bad. It's just like, I don't know, just thinking of things where I'm like, why did they do this?
Another scene I really like is when they are in the library and Larry is looking for a book, and he finds the book and it's by Guy in Head, which is a really funny
boogie boogie book.
Yes, it's a funny kid's joke, like Guy and then middle name N, period, and then head. That's fun. And then mm-hmm. when he is, there's a part where he's trying to get all of the kids to pay attention to him because he wants to tell them to pull the covers over your head if the boogeyman comes, which I guess that could make the boogeyman not get you. That seems a little bit weird, but that's fine. And he like appears in their little TV because they're having a story time. And then the librarian's like getting mad at the kids because they're laughing at him. Obviously, she can't see them because she's a mean adult. And then she starts shushing them. And then Larry turns that into being a train conductor, like, shh, shh, shh. And then a whole train comes through and he's like being the conductor of a train. I thought that was really cute.
Aren't you like just sick of shushing librarians in movies and things?
That is a trope. Have you ever been shushed by a librarian? Because I have, for real.
I don't know.
At school, I was.
Yeah, I'm sure. But yeah, it's like one of those things. Like, I'm like, I'm just sick of it for some reason.
It is like, a trope. Yeah.
I know. Do you never want to see that again?
Do you remember the sketch on All That where there would be the librarian and she'd go, yeah. No,
this is a library.
Talking in the library.
This is a library. Laurie Bittenberg, whatever. Yeah.
Yeah. And then she'd get like a chainsaw out. I'm trying to whatever. She's like, cut down a tree. It's hilarious. It's very funny.
Yeah. After that, All That skit, never again. Yeah. Never should do it. Never do a. They nailed it with.
Agree.
That. Yeah. Yeah. That is a good. There was something funny. The name of the book too. It was Le Livre de Boogie.
Yeah.
Or something like that.
Which means the Book of Boogie.
Book of Boogie. Mm-hmm. And then another thing too I wish they established, this is really nitpicky bullshit because I like this movie, but they don't really I feel like establish that much with the young kid that had leukemia, the younger brother.
Yeah. And he's like the weak link to me too, because he's like very whiny, I think.
Yeah, he's not really part of the movie until the end. And there's like those name drops a little bit where they're kind of like, oh yeah, well, my brother was the one that gave him the bone marrow and it wasn't me. And I wanted to be able to help him. And I'm like, this is really cool, dark stuff, but not dark, but just like interesting character. But there's not really much about him in the beginning with like having an imaginary friend. Like there was never like the scene of her saying you can't have an imaginary friend anymore, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah.
Like that should have been in the movie in the beginning.
I think it's because they probably didn't want us to catch on that was the reason why he's turning into a boogeyman maybe right away. I don't know, yeah. But I think they could have definitely set up the family dynamics a little better, because those are the best scenes of the movie, I think, when mm-hmm. the family is like interacting. Like, yeah. I really like that scene where there's the news outside of the house and the dad's like on the phone talking to the press and he's like, just check our website. He's doing his funny Ned Meyers thing.
There was a funny thing at the... At the end, he's like, your dad checked the internet news or something like that. The internet, it's here. You're right. With the family, there's a lot of like overlapping dialogue going on with all them and stuff, which is like pretty good. There was something about missing with that little brother.
Yeah.
Even the older brother, they kind of get lost in it. And
I think they have a really good scene at the end, but I would have liked to see more of that going in. Can we talk about the end? Because I think we're kind of almost there.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's just a lot of shenanigans with boogeymen and invisible people, you know, which is kind of progressive. And at the end, we kind of get to that.
Yeah.
So.
But what happens eventually is Larry and Francis have to fight the boogeyman. And Francis comes to realize that the reason that this boogeyman has become that way is because it is her old imaginary friend, Zoe, who she had prematurely stopped believing in because of Darwin's leukemia, which I thought mm-hmm. was really cool and fun. And like, how did you feel seeing? So there's this like whole scene where she turns from the boogeyman, and it's very tricky because for all intents and purposes, you think it's a man, and then she like slowly turns into her like cute little woman form. She's like a little bit elvish, like she has those pointy little ears, and she's really, really, really cute. How did you feel about that moment?
Yeah, I mean, all that's, it's great little kind of storytelling, at least as far as like, oh, that's cool. And then they, you know, don't destroy the boogeyman or whatever. They just, you know, become, you know what it reminds me of a lot of too? Did you ever watch Big Mouth, the cartoon with like Nick Kroll and
No, I haven't.
Oh, that's another one maybe, because they all have like, I forget what they call them, but they're basically like their imaginary friends, but they're kind of like their puberty monsters. I think that's what their names are. Yeah. So they all, like all the characters have like their own little puberty monster. And it kind of, this is what this reminds me of a little bit too, but I think it's good. I just don't think that they established imaginary friends in the beginning for those two characters, you know? And that's the only thing that's kind of a bummer about it. But
well, it
it's
has
cute
to be
when she
a surprise. So we're shocked that she had an imaginary friend, Ryan. It's the element of surprise. It's the twist ending.
Yeah.
Did you see it coming, Ryan? Or you've seen it already?
I've seen the movie, but I kind of, it was like, it was a coming to me like within a minute, like, or 30 seconds before it was happening.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, okay, like this, because this isn't one I probably saw multiple times, but it wasn't one that like stuck in my, head like the other ones did, some of the other early DCOMs.
Yeah.
And like I said, it only played until 2006 and then they stopped replaying it. I guess that would have been when I was done watching these anyway. But.
Freaking moms ruin everything.
But yeah, pretty good. And yeah, she's like this little kind of English elvish person.
And did you notice that she is the doll in Franny's room?
Oh,
Francis's
no.
room? Yeah, so there is a doll that looks like Larry in Darwin's room, and there's a doll that looks like Zoe in, and they're the ones that heads turn.
Okay.
Which is kind of fun.
Yeah. I didn't notice. I think that is cool. That is good.
Yeah. You'd probably only notice that if you've seen this movie 500 times.
Well, yeah, I'm going to watch it right after this again, and I'll.
Okay, good.
I'll write that down.
That's what
I'll look for
hear.
That.
Did you like, I actually, and even to this day, I get a little bit choked up at the end.
Really?
Like, I love the ending when Zoe and Larry are like, you know, everyone's kind of happy, they solved it, Darwin is still going to be Larry's friend now, he believes in him again, and then Zoe's, or Francis says, you know, now me and Zoe can make up for so much lost time. And they're like, no, we're not going to come back and see you again, because at this age, like, you've grown out of us. And she's like so heartbroken at it. And then, Ryan, we get the best DCOM kiss of all time.
We
put it
do.
In the books. And it's a very surprising kiss. Like, you wouldn't expect that to happen. Like, they had a
it
little
is.
Bit of like a vibe going on. But when, because Larry and Francis kiss, and it is good, in my opinion.
It is. But apparently, like, Disney was kind of like wary about that, with like a black dude kissing a white girl, you know, in one of their movies.
Well, I mean, that's like, this movie feels very progressive for that time in a lot of ways, even though, like, if you look at it now, it's like not at all. But in that time, it was. But yeah, like, doesn't surprise me. Disney being shitty as per usual.
According to Entertainment Weekly, that was one of the things that with this movie.
I can't believe that in the late night. Well, I mean, I can, but fuck off, Disney.
Well, there's something interesting about her, like, coming out and you're like, you're not a boogeyman. And then she's like, no, I'm a boogie person.
Yeah. That's
and
cute.
I'm like, there's something interesting about that, too. Where I was just like, oh, wow. But it was, yeah, it's good. It's like, it's really weird and indifferent and like, yeah, pretty clever in moments. It just has like that middle kind of, for me, a little bit of a dip. Just when it starts repeating itself a little bit, but
the middle
it has a really good beginning and end, I feel like. So,
but Ryan, if there were commercials in between and you could go get snacks and use the microwave, do you think that would put you in a different headspace?
On Disney Plus, they should play the old commercials.
They should, because like maybe that gives you a minute to like forget what just happened.
They should. I love watching old things on YouTube that have old commercials on them and stuff.
Yeah, because like, Ryan, what would happen is, like, I know this happened to you, it definitely happened to me, your nachos wouldn't be quite done yet, so then you'd have to go back and check on your nachos, and then you miss one of those scenes where Francis is like, it wasn't me, so then you get to see it again later.
So and it feels more fresh.
Yeah, for me it was nachos. Was that your snack food of choice?
What did I have? I think I watched this while I had McDonald's breakfast.
Yum. Good choice. Plain McDonald's breakfast.
No, it's a you know, sausage McMuffin.
Yeah, but it has to be plain. No, well, I guess it is plain anyway. This is a joke because when Ryan was little, he would order McDonald's Happy Meals, and he would tell his mom he wanted it plain, Denise.
Well, no, not even that. I would say nothing on it.
Oh, nothing.
Burger on with it. Nothing on it.
Yeah. Cute. Love it.
Yeah. It's yeah, it's this is a winner, I would say.
Yeah. Would you call this a 10 out of 10 perfect film deserving of an Oscar? At least one.
The options are 10 out of 10 perfect film deserving an Oscar, or just it throw in the garbage. There's no in between.
I mean, there is an in between, but there is only one correct answer.
All right, 10 out of 10 deserves an Oscar.
Ugh, I knew you would feel that way, Ryan.
You know, I have a creep of the week.
Who? Tell me. Oh, I really hope it's the same person as mine, because I have a whole spiel to get into that I forgot about.
I'm going to say it's hopefully it's the same. Should we maybe it's still like a 1, 2, 3, okay, and then who it is. Okay. I'll right. I go 1, 2, 3 and then boom. And then say it.
Okay.
Okay. 1, 2, 3.
The teacher. Yes! There's no reason for this to think, like, maybe there is, but I'm so glad. Like, is it the rumpled jacket that makes you feel that way? Like, what is it specifically?
It's when like she walks up to school, and she's in there, and they both like give the eyes to each other, and they're like, yes, hey Francis, and hey Mr. whatever, and then the her younger friend, because she's skipped some grades, is just like, who's that?
Yeah.
Well, that's just my biology teacher. He loves me.
Ew. I forgot about that part. Bleh, bleh. All right. Well, let's hear, if you'd like, we can hear my thoughts on this character. Let's see.
Okay.
I don't know. It's 9 seconds long. It's labeled the teacher is an alcoholic. Let's
see. I will go to my grave on this. The teacher who gets his car egged is an alcoholic.
I assume I meant the character and not the actor. I think that's what I meant. And then I just have one more. Oh, this is, I do remember what I said during this one. This one might be a little cringy. Let's just see. Okay. Let's see where we
are. We gotta hear them all.
Yeah. Here we go.
When the teacher gets his car egg, she's like, oh no, now I have to clean up egg off my car and vomit because I'm gonna puke because I'm an alcoholic.
What? What? I don't even know what you said.
I said, the end there. When the teacher got his car egged, he thought to himself, oh great, now not only do I have to clean these eggs off my car, but also the vomit because I'm an alcoholic. That's a little bit cringe. I might get canceled for that one. Sorry.
That sucks. He has his freaking top down on his convertible, and there's gets eggs all over the interior. That looks like it sucks.
Yeah, that would suck. But that's what you get for being a creeper. For being the creeper. He was a creeper. Because, well, there's also the moment where she's collecting all the phone numbers and addresses of the students, and he's like, "Give me that.
Give me that.
Give me that." Yeah, he wants them for undisclosed reasons.
Yeah. Oh yeah, that was like the beginning thing. We didn't even talk about the clocks. That's what kind of starts everything, is the clocks all get set back in the town 3 hours or something. And that's kind of a stupid thing where they're all like getting up for eating breakfast and they're like don't realize it's 3 a.m. or whatever. Like, because all the clocks are different until he checks the Navy report or something.
The Navy report. Yeah, I kind of love that scene though, because it feels relatable. Like, didn't that ever happen to you when you were younger? Like, you woke up thinking it was, like, time for school, and then actually it wasn't because, like, you were dreaming or whatever. Did that ever happen to you?
Well, I'd have those dreams where you felt like you woke up and went to school.
Yeah.
Had a whole day of school, and then you wake up and realize you hadn't even gone yet.
You like, have to go again. That's terrible.
That's the worst.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it would be like a normal, not even like a weird thing happened, just like a normal day. Yeah, that would happen a lot. That was a reoccurring thing for me.
I'm so glad that happens to you too. Like, everyone I know, they have such interesting, like, fantasy dreams. And then mine's like, I made a grocery list, and then I went to the grocery store and bought all the groceries, and then I came home. And then I woke up, and I have to actually do that.
Yeah, I don't have any groceries. That's funny.
It's lame.
Yeah. I just thought this was interesting. I mean, this is not has anything to do with much, but they shot this in Utah, and I always thought when it has that school and there's all these big mountains in the background, I'm like, oh man, this is a nice place they're in for that.
It's picturesque.
Yeah, and I was like curious, like looking up the actors and stuff. And our main girl, Erin Chambers, was in a bunch of Mormon movies.
I can see that 1,000%.
So she's LDS, and she was in like a bunch of stuff. Like,
she's LDS. And she wore this dress?
She is. And she was in like Singles Ward, Second Ward, and a bunch of little things.
I don't know.
But she's been in a lot of TV too. She's been in, let's see.
I don't think you're allowed to wear a dress like that. Just saying.
Oh, that's her today, huh?
Yeah. That's a good dress.
Wow. Yeah.
Oh, she got a BFA in acting from Brigham Young University. Good for her.
She's born in Portland, it says too. Did she go to BYU and is not Mormon? Or maybe she was?
No, it says she is. It says she is a Latter-day Saint. Maybe she's just like a Jack Mormon, you know?
One of those. Mm-hmm.
She has like a Jessica Chastain thing going.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's good that she's still working.
Oh, I did have a question about this actress.
Okay.
That we might need to talk about together. I assume it's the one labeled important question. Let's see.
Oh, okay, yeah. We need to make sure we get through all your voice memos.
Here we go.
Is this actress the Molly Ringwald of DCOMs?
Oh, yeah. I remember you mentioning this.
Yes. What do you think?
She definitely has that look. If they were like, we need a Molly Ringwald type for this, they definitely nailed it with that. I don't think she has, at least in this movie, she doesn't pop like Molly does.
Yeah, you're right.
And she's not like in every. She's not like part of like the crew. She's not in any other, you know, DCOMs.
That's very true. Because if you're a Molly Ringwald type, you get more than one movie.
What's like who would be the Molly Ringwald of the DCOMs then?
Huh.
If there's anybody that kind of repeated, I mean, a lot of them didn't really get to be in like multiple different things.
Yeah. No one's really hopping out for me. If you asked Christy, it would be her.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, I like this. This is a good. This is probably one of the creepiest, you know, DCOMs, I would say for sure.
Yeah, it's fun. It's creepy. It's emotional. It talks about cancer. What more can you ask for?
But it's pretty good.
It's good.
It is probably the scariest DCOM, you know, at least intentionally scary.
Yeah.
Not like a 13th Year or something like that, which is
just scary in another way.
Yeah.
But yeah, we both agree it's a 10 out of 10 perfect film, worthy of an Academy Award. There's no debate on that.
It's on like DCOM, that one for sure.
It's on. And now there's something we need to address, Ryan. I have to bring this to your attention.
Okay.
As you know, we talked a lot about very good friend of the show, Christy Carlson Romano, last week.
We dedicated a whole episode about her.
We did. And I think we were kind. I think we were compassionate, loving.
I don't. Maybe. Get back to us. Tell us if we were. Because it's all a blur.
Well, she has made a response video to us. It is labeled specifically for us, and it is called How I Deal with My Haters.
Yes.
I haven't seen it. I just know that it is about us from sources.
I haven't either. I'm wondering if should we watch it now?
Yeah, let's watch a little bit of it and see if we have any thoughts.
So here's how I deal with my haters. I'm so grateful for the support that I have had. Making videos is a way of connecting with people. The positivity seems to be really abundant and abundantly clear that it helps people to talk about subjects that maybe they've experienced or they know people that have experienced so that they can share this with that person and sort of feel a little bit better through the day. And to know that somebody that maybe you thought you knew has a deeper story might just be an intriguing concept. Actually, I didn't really realize...
Okay, I'm going to pause because I just need to comment that she's talking about kindness, but she's like clearly seething. She's like, I need to talk to people today about haters. Like you, Madeline and fucking Ryan. Like, look at the hate in her eyes.
It's Madam Mummy Madeline and Mummy Ryan.
Yeah, that's right. Get it. Don't get it twisted, Christy. But for real, so like, do you see the rage? She's like clenching her fists. Ryan, she's gonna kill
us. It makes good man go evil.
Wait, what were you saying about you said something in the middle. What did you say?
What?
You said something during the video, but I couldn't hear it.
Oh, I said, she's like, you know, it helps people and the experiences that they have experienced as well. I'm like, yeah, everyone's has tried to be Anne Hathaway or Katy Perry or something. You know, Everyone's gone out everyone's auditioned for Princess Diaries.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times Britney Spears got my record deal. Anyway. All right, back to Christy. She's fuming. I'm scared.
To know that somebody that maybe you thought you knew has a deeper story might just be an intriguing concept. Actually, I didn't really realize that it was going to be successful. I just kind of started vlogging and I was like, let's do it. I do, however, see all the support and then the occasional sort of negative comment. And I think you can start to look at only those, which is a testament to how the human brain is wired. So we're pretty wired to like only see the negative. And I'll tell like, say my husband, who's like a Jedi, hey, you know, like this comment really affected me. What do you think this means? Like, how am I being perceived? Or maybe I'm, you know, I have feelings. I have big feelings. And he's like, look, your feelings don't matter about this stuff. You know, like, you know what you are. You know who you are.
Her husband said your feelings don't matter. Christy, that's not inspirational. Christy, she's talking to us. Ryan, she's talking to us. Who else is she talking to?
I don't know.
She's mad at us.
I suppose. I don't know.
Look at her.
Do you think she... I purposely, on the last video, didn't put her name in any bio or anything.
Okay, thank
or
you. Any,
it's all the CCR. I was like, I'm not making it so you can... search and it's just Christy.
Okay, good, Ryan. So, but you have to remember the sheer fame of this podcast. Like, everyone will be talking about it 2 minutes after sharing it comes out. It's on Twitter, it's everywhere.
We did put it out there in the world.
Shit. All right.
God damn it.
She's gonna hunt us down. Okay. All right. I don't know how much longer we're gonna watch, but
I know. I'm like, it's like it feels like it's gone for like half an hour, yeah. And it's only a minute 15 into a 9 minute video.
All right, we'll give you a couple more minutes to get to your point, Christy. Let's see.
Yeah, she won't. So
I want the nugget. I want to know what the nugget of this episode is. All right, here we go.
Like, it's like cycle of negativity. It doesn't do any good for anybody. I think we all have haters, right? Have you ever had somebody make a comment about you either to your face or online or through text? That's made you feel small, not valuable, vulnerable, sad, insecure. That's a lot of the feelings I've been having lately because these vlogs are a vulnerable representation of my life and they're geared towards helping you.
Okay, now I feel bad.
You do?
A little. Chrissy, I'm sorry. I know you're being vulnerable. But, okay, wait. Can you can see the views that it has?
Yes.
Okay, so I have some constructive criticism. This only has 26,961 views. So what I think could get her more views is if she wrote, how I deal with my haters like Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
All right, are we done?
Like, yeah, how I deal with my haters like it's on like DCOM. Yeah,
like Anne Hathaway.
No, we're supportive.
Yeah, we love you, Christy. I think you're just getting it wrong.
We're just so we're interested. Yeah. We're worried and we're kind of like in like the Free Britney movement, but we're like Free Christy.
Free Christy. We love you. Please understand us. Oh, I really want to read The Scary Truth About Having a Stalker.
I haven't watched that one yet either.
Since this is a Halloween episode, should we watch like 2 minutes of this?
Yes,
one?
it's a real spooky one. Yeah,
okay. Let's watch this one. I'm gonna announce it in a scary way. The Scary Truth About Having a Stalker.
So here's what it's actually like to have a stalker. This is not a joke. This is pretty serious. Because the term stalker has been normalized in a way that, like, oh, you know, it's an ex that keeps checking my social media or somebody that just won't go away. But there's a very big difference between somebody that's in your personal space or somebody that you know and somebody that you have no idea what they're capable of and essentially decided to terrorize you.
So already off the bat, I want to notice something, which is she's basically saying your stories aren't as legitimate as mine because I am famous. So therefore, I have random stalkers and your stalkers are just the people in your lives.
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay. Anyway.
Not haters.
Stop. No, we love you. But I feel a little bit targeted by what she just said. It's fine. We're not stalkers. We just watch every single thing she does.
And we nitpick every single word.
Yeah, but we love her. Okay.
Anyway. And record a podcast twice a month about it.
Yeah, we suck. It's fine.
I'm dead.
All right, Christy, tell us more.
So basically, when you're a child actor, you tend to attract people who are fans of yours, who somehow embed themselves into your life because they'll do free website work for you or they'll do little things here and there so they can get on the inside of your personal space. You know, Selena is a perfect example of somebody who let their guard down and hired somebody who had originally been a fan.
Wait, you're talking about Selena?
We all know what tragically happened.
She is, in fact, comparing her story to Selena's story. Now, Christy, be careful where you're going with this.
I want to know what happened with a stalker, or she's just going to talk about other people's stalkers.
Yeah, let's see if she like gets into her own stalking story here. I'm curious.
Of this person, they see themselves in you, or they're in love with you because they think that you're, I don't know, like we all put our pants on the same way. I'm not perfect. The profile of a stalker is somebody who generally is a little confused about reality. I find that people that send violent messages are the ones that you really, really have to
take note of and do something about.
Now, Christy, do you have a stalker? Because that's what you're leading us to believe. It kind of sounds more like Christy is advertising to get a stalker. Okay, that one's going to get us canceled for sure.
Not only can you report them, but you have to do background searches on them. You have to know where they live. You have to know everything you can about that person. And you can do this all for free online. You can see their coworkers, their neighbors, whether they're an offender. Like, you can see all these things so that you can make sure that if you're being essentially hunted by somebody, you can hunt back.
We'll be her stalker. We'll be your stalker, Christy.
You should put The Scary Truth About Having a Stalker like Madeline and Ryan.
From what I know, in terms of like military people kind of have intel training and they look at profiles of people and say, is this person violent? Is this person sort of something like an incel? Is this person somebody who is going to attack or not attack? And
so we're 3 minutes in and I don't think she has a stalker.
Right.
I'm going to skip ahead another minute. Let's go 5 minutes. Christy, okay. Do you have a stalker to tell us about?
Okay.
Now that I'm smarter, I feel like when I was younger, I had my dad sort of the head of my security and he was very resourceful. But now that I am married to somebody who has a lot of training, military training and whatnot, I know how to try to start to empower myself. I decided that I wanted to get our house protected because that was one of the first things. Like, I can't go to sleep at night not feeling protected. And so I chose Vivint. I absolutely love them, and I can literally just go on my phone, and I can just, like, pop open my app, I can just see what's going on in my house right now, and I can know that everything's okay, and I get notifications sent to my phone, It has a nice little sign outside.
I am so mad. She doesn't have a stalker. This is an ad. What the fuck?
Another personal security tip that I did see recently was putting boots outside your house. I put my husband's hunting boots outside. There you go.
Okay, I'm livid.
This is the biggest load of shit ever.
At least she was in the same room as Anne Hathaway. Like, what are you... This is... You're doing an ad about how you don't have a stalker and you want one. You know what, Christy?
Just how she protects herself and how she knows how to probably shoot and stuff is what she's probably saying.
Your husband's work boots aren't going to stop me and Brian. Cut that out.
Coming for you. It's the Boogie Woogie. It's Madeline and Ryan.
And it's on Life Decom. I feel like that's the perfect ending. We could keep talking, but that was a really good ending.
It's the Boogeyman, y'all.
Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween.